Tiffany.
Glad you all are here. This is Sports Shrinks, and I'm one of your hosts, Tiffany Brown, and with me is dun, dun,
Katie
dun.
Steele.
We're so excited to be back. It always feels like it's been a while since we record every couple weeks. I did get a very stern text from a friend in Texas who said they really want us to be recording this every week. The
Aww.
stern was very kind and loving, and I knew exactly the tone in which it was sent. And so I'm thinking at some point we might get to that. We'll see how things are going. How are
That's
you
the ultimate
doing?
compliment.
Yeah,
Thanks,
totally.
friend in Texas.
How have you been this week?
I've been great. Yeah, we are. I actually, there was a funny little thing. Camden is playing on this lacrosse team, and I thought of you and all of you listeners. He is best buddies with my best buddy's kid, and they're a
How
year
fun.
apart, so they never have gotten to be on the same team. But this lacrosse team is third and fourth graders, so it was a big deal that they were going to overlap and get to play together. So they had a tournament up in Portland over the last weekend, and so we went together. We got adjoining rooms, it was super fun.
Fun.
They swam. It was just like this sweet time. And the morning of before the game started, we all went to breakfast at Sherry's Diner, which was lovely. And we were sitting around the table just chit-chatting and bantering. And Tennyson looked at me and he goes, "Hey, Katie, do you get nervous before our games?" And Cassie, my friend, laughed and goes, "She definitely doesn't get nervous." And then we had a really sweet conversation about Tennyson kind of joked about how Cassie gets nervous and he can tell when she's standing there and then gets silent and is just watching the game instead of chatting with somebody else. And so I shared how I just trust them innately when they're out on the field to do their thing and that they're stretching themselves and growing and putting themselves in new situations all the time. And it's just so fun to watch them grow and develop and play new sports and things of that nature. So my trust in them doesn't have me get nervous because I just know they're doing the very best they can while they're out there. And so what ended up happening is they play three games, we drive home, Camden's getting ready for bed, and I had kind of dog-eared that conversation in my head to loop back around to Camden because he was kind of quiet throughout the conversation. And I said to him, I said, "Hey, buddy, we were talking about nervousness, and Tennyson asked me if I got nervous at breakfast this morning. I'm wondering what you took from that conversation." And without missing a beat, he goes, "Yeah, you don't care about my sports." Ugh. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, buddy, how interesting. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I love your sports. I love your sports. I love watching you. I love you getting excited." And it was just such a moment to me of thank goodness, one, that I looped back around to him. And we had this conversation, and ultimately he ended up putting language to it as we kind of bantered of me saying, "No, I get so excited. I know you're doing the best you can and your coaches are there coaching you." And he says, "Yeah, actually, I see that now because you are smiling on the sidelines and you look excited, but you're not yelling like a lot of the parents of you're just smiling and the coach is telling us what to do. And so you don't need to be telling us what to do." And so, and we kind of created this shared language, but this nervousness isn't a good or a bad thing. I think all parents have different reactions, and he and I had different working definitions of what that word meant and then what it represented. And I'm so grateful that we got the opportunity to clarify that because otherwise, that to me, I was like, and he loves sports. Like, sports are so much a part of his passion. And so that had to have felt like such
It's like
a,
identity in there too.
yes, such a miss of if he interpreted that I just then don't care about his sports, how that I could see him equating that to then I don't care about him, which obviously there's nothing more important to me than my kids. And so it was. I guess I share this in the sense of kids are so complex and sports represent so much, and how important it is that we're looping back around to our kids so that we can get clarity to make sure that we're on the same page and we have the same understanding of things and that they're interpreting our words how we intend them to be, but they don't always land that way because we're humans and different things mean different things to each of us.
Oh, I'm just thinking about him sitting with that and how, like, the experience as a kid to have a parent, or really, frankly, any adult, loop back around and say, hey, was thinking about this. What have you been thinking about? And then the trust he had that he could tell you that, I mean, huge win as a parent for sure. But I love what you're saying around how nervousness has such a different definition for people, because I think it can mean fear. It can mean just excited. It can mean just like, oh yeah, my body's giving me some information right now. I'm just kind of nervous. I can feel it in my stomach. So I feel like what you're getting at is how it can be so many different things, and it's not a measurement of love and care, but it can be used that way in conversation around, oh my gosh, I was so nervous for you. Meaning, oh my gosh, I love you so much. And that's not obviously what you were meaning. And you all were able to talk about it.
Oh, 100%. And that was one of the questions he asked, is he said, I get nervous. So I'm just curious, how do you not get nervous? I want to not get nervous. Right. So just the different layers that can come up when we are able to sync up on what one person took and what the other person meant. Because we just take so much for granted and we use shorthand. But when we really tease it out, Camden and I realize, oh, we're having a similar experience. We're just using different words, right? I care about you and I love you being in this moment and being excited about it. And we just found then our own shared language instead of just random shorthand words.
Oh, I love it so much. And I love the idea too of just being able to get clear about what nervousness means. As you were saying all that, I was thinking about my best friend and her son hit some, you know, really, really huge PRs this last week. And he's been working at them for a long time. Shout out to you, Carter. I know that it's been a long haul. But of course, he gets nervous, and her nervousness comes, and she would name it as anxiety, I think, but it comes along because she knows how hard her kid has worked, and she knows how important those goals have been for her. And so we were talking this last week, right before one of his races, and he's out of state, so we couldn't be there. So it's, you know, following it on the Athletic Net app, hoping that the information that's coming through is accurate and timely and all the things that come with that. But she, you know, she couldn't keep having the conversation during his race. And out of everyone that she can sit in conversation with, she's probably going to laugh as she's hearing me say this right now, it's probably me. And yet she's like, no, I can't talk. I got to go while he's racing. And her, like, mama heart just needed to be kind of on her own while she took, you know, a moment to pay attention to what happened, because she knew how important it was for her son. And so I think that what you're getting at is just how different nervousness, anxiety, it's not a measurement of how much we care, but it really can signify, like, whoa, I care about this myself because I know there's something at stake. And I think what we've talked about before is there's also some adults who their nervousness is because they want their kid to get the win, and that's the important outcome, and they want that outcome, and that's where the nerves are. And I think we get nervous when we can't control an outcome. But in this case, we're talking about just the things that are attached to when we really care about something and know that our kids care about something.
100%. And I think it's the beauty of sports, right? Is it does elicit so many emotions and a variety of emotions throughout a race or a match or a game. And you sit in any stands, which this has become like one of my favorite pastimes now, of like just sitting in the stands and listening and observing people, because it does bring up so much for people. And I think just getting clear on how come, right? Of like just asking ourselves the question of like, wow, I was so whatever I was. How come? Like, was it because I did care they won, or because my kids worked so hard, or because this was the state championship game, whatever the case may be. But it is such a good opportunity to learn more about ourselves with how our body responds in those moments. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it makes me think too about how, and I think it was sociologists that have written about this before, so not to get too heady and nerdy here, it's not my original idea, is what I'm trying to get at real quick, is this idea of part of the reason that we all are so drawn to sports is because it allows us to have the multitude of human experiences and emotions. And so when we don't feel like we can have those emotions in our day to day because of, you know, the things we've talked about around, you know, family rules, you're not allowed to cry, yada, yada, all these things, that we can do so within sport because it's permissible to have, you know, a big reaction if you win, a big reaction if you lose. And that's not as permissible in everyday life. And so I think about that too, around how a lot of emotions pop up for us around these things. And it's not so cut and dry because it's, you know, it's our kids, it's our nephews, it's our nieces, it's the kids we care about. It's the people that we're fans of. It's all the things that come with why we love sports so dang much.
And emotions are so primal.
Yes.
Right? Different feelings.
I can't control them. Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Well, good for you, mama. That sounds like a great talk. We're going to shift gears into, what I think has been taking the internet by a little storm. So again, our par for the course segment is always getting at a conversation that is, out in the universe that we would sit back and go, this is just par for the course of how this always goes. And this week is the new uniforms for the Olympic track and field team. So their new kits for the Olympic, I think it's just for trials, or are they saying it's for the Olympics?
Now it's I'm for the Olympic team.
For the Olympic team. So if you have not seen this post, we highly recommend maybe just a quick Google search of Olympic track and field kits for the 2024 games in Paris, and you might see a bunch of hoopla. But essentially, this unveiling of these highly anticipated kits have actually meant a significant amount of criticism, specifically about the women's uniform. So
only about the women's uniform.
Yeah, only. Fair enough.
Which
fair
is
enough.
The par for the course, right? Is that it is the women's uniform that is makes you drop your jaw of how, and we will say Nike is going to release multiple uniforms. The athlete will get to choose. However, this is the uniform that they chose to showcase that I don't even, how would you just, it's the bottom part of the uniform. How would
it's
you even
It's a super high-waisted bottom. So basically it's like every part of a person's body from about the hips down is completely out for show. And yeah, you're right. So Nike put this out there as a teaser. So out of every single one of the uniforms that they say are like dozens of combinations that you can choose from, this is the one. And it is revealing. It completely, like, it doesn't cover any part of a woman's privacy area or whatever language people like to use there. Their bits are out, I guess, is what we could say. And that's the par for the course. One, two, what do you think about it? And I'm thinking especially because you competed in track and field. And so what do you think it would be like to be running in that swimsuit looking, honestly, it looks like a swimsuit that you might wear on a vacation where you kind of want to show off a little bit in a way where, you know, it's coming up high on the leg, it's cutting, you know, not very modestly.
Not as like an Olympian and an elite athlete who is
competing
a major feat.
Yes.
Honestly, what popped into my head was all of the girls in particular, girls or teens that we interviewed for, through the Price She Pays process, and them talking to us as young teens and sharing how impactful the uniform choices was for their mental health and their ability to show up and compete. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the release of these uniforms, those girls popped into my head who are so wise and perceptive and could articulate the fact that when they were playing volleyball and they had these short little booty shorts and their peers were sitting right behind them at the games and they didn't even have an opportunity to adjust their wedgie or pull their shorts down, or if they were on their period, what that would mean.
Mm-hmm.
I heard their voices over and over and over again of these teenagers get it. And yet we're asking these elite athletes to wear this, and this is what we're conveying to girls and women is an appropriate choice, when what they tell us when we ask them is that that is uncomfortable. And yet we must not be listening, because if we ask, and we asked during the interview mm-hmm. process, and they told us, it impacts how I'm able to perform, because I'm worried about if it gets uncomfortable or I need to adjust it, how am I going to be able to do that? And this leaves no room
right
at all for anything. And in the comments, somebody even said of like, well, I hope they're also paying for waxing.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, yeah, a few of the other comments are, yeah, I hope USATF is paying for the bikini waxes. Someone else said, if the labia are hanging out on a still mannequin, which is how they put the uniforms out there for us to see. If the labia are hanging out on a still mannequin, what do we expect to happen to a moving person? Someone else who is likely to make the Olympic team, Tara Davis Woodhall, commented, wait, my hoo-ha is going to be out. Another Olympian who's likely to compete in steeplechase, Colleen Quigley, said, I mean, I still want to make the team, but like, knowing that these are the kits that are coming. And I love what you just said, because we were so specific in asking about the barriers for competition and being an athlete. And we heard over and over and over again pieces about their uniform, what they were expected to wear. And I think the other part that gets missed is, not only is it uncomfortable, not only does it mean some brain space to knowing that they're having to wear that particular uniform potentially, but the other thing that happens that I think gets missed is how it also means that people are oohing and aahing or coming and watching them. That's what a lot of the teens told us, and not coming to watch them perform and compete and be these magnificent, badass performers or athletes, but being kind of seen and looked at and sexualized. And that's exactly what I thought as soon as I saw it was, oh, this isn't about women going out and being able to compete for USA and have this incredible moment as an athlete. We are saying this is what women are going to wear, because it's going to bring in the best attention. And I don't know, I think we're way past the point where we have to sexualize what women are wearing to get people to pay attention to women's sports.
100%. And that these images of the uniforms is what feels like a giant backslide.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was a couple other comments. I just I'm scrolling through the photos, the screenshots I took yesterday. Someone else said, and I love this comment, they took 16% of our fabric too. And, you know, referring to taking money and equal pay. And I think, you know, the frustrating thing as a fan is knowing right now, it should have been the most non-event that those uniforms and those kits were unveiled. They're unveiled for us as fans to get excited, to see, you know, it's a ploy to bring in more conversation about uniforms. As an Oregon football fan, this is an old conversation, you know, where we're getting all hyped up because of uniforms and colors and this and that. For an athlete, I feel like it's the very last thing they should be thinking about when they're heading into the games, and yet it's getting front and center. And if you scroll through those comments, thousands and thousands of comments, there are high-level elite pro athletes who will be on that Olympic team who have comments about this. And I'm thinking about the brain space that it's taking and the psychological pressure of knowing, wow, this is what I'm supposed to be wearing. And maybe even I wanted to wear, or I'm used to wearing a uniform that I don't know what it's called for to fit that way. For us non-track folks, in terms of competitors, these are the kits that are like a swimsuit that people run in. And it's fit in such a way where there might be lots of competitors where that's the type of uniform they want to wear because that's what helps them. But that particular way in this year, where how it's cut, and how it's expected to fit, is absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, so I think it's not a welcome uniform unveiling. And yet here we are, not surprising that women are on the other side again of this disparity, looking specifically at the way they're supposed to look and dress for a competition.
Yes, that is hitting the nail on the head. Versus, let's talk about the results. Let's talk about their efforts. Let's talk about their trainings instead of let's talk about what they're wearing. Because totally. We can't produce something that is congruent to, they are fierce competitors. Let's let them be fierce competitors. We don't need to be sexualizing them. We don't need to be creating provocative uniforms that are that much more risque. And again, that could be a choice. And if somebody is comfortable with that, they should be able to wear that.
Yes.
For that to be the first release, that's where the mark is missed. Women should be able to choose and wear whatever they want without any commentary. And
here we are.
Of course, we're going to release the one to get this kind of sexualized appeal about what the women are going to be wearing instead of, no, let's be able to focus on what the women are doing, how they're competing.
And the uniforms that are going to give them what they need for the best performance. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so, I mean, I think there was someone who also noted that in a post something about, you know, if it was truly beneficial to their physical performance, then it, and if that's what was being discussed, then it would have been asked of women who were actually performing and competing. Were there potentially women in those rooms? Potentially. We don't know that right now. There's a lot of details. I think that hopefully some badass reporter will get in there and find, you know, some of those details. I would assume there probably were women in those rooms, but the fact of the matter is, A, did they get listened to and heard? B, were they looking at it from the frame of what actually helps women perform? Or was it, oh, this really looks good? It's making me more fired up as we talk about it.
It's so disheartening. It's especially coming out of the basketball season where women just dominated. It was so fun to see women celebrated the way that they should be. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
So yeah, this was, it's deflating for sure.
I feel like some other brand should just do something. I want the credit for this if somebody does it. I want some other brand to take the sports that they make uniforms for and make them so obnoxious and ridiculous to call out how stupid this is. Like, it's just so disheartening. And it's also just so typical. And I think that's the part that is like a cycle in my head of, it's so disheartening. Well, yeah, this is how it goes. Oh, this is how it goes. It makes me so mad. It's so disheartening. I mean, it's a never ending loop. And as a fan, I've been in that loop since yesterday, and I don't have a single ounce of a possibility of competing in the Olympic Games in July in Paris. And so, shocking news, shocking news.
Me either.
You heard it here first. We break news here on this podcast now. Well, okay. I know we could talk about this forever and we'll wrap up here. We would love to hear, if you're listening to this, you've got some strong comments, please, please send them our way. We got to hear a little bit about it from you all. So, or make your needs known in the comment section on those posts on Instagram, because I think people are paying attention. There are so many articles that are being written. As we switch gears, we're going to get into a question that is focused on teens specifically. And so as we think about teens, I was considering anyone who's getting into a conversation about the experience of teens oftentimes will kind of think back to, well, when I was a teen, and this is what it was like for me. And I think that keeps us from being able to be helpful sometimes. So I'm putting that out there. It's like as if I were in a classroom setting with my students and be like, okay, if we have those assumptions, let's set them aside for a second. Let's really, you know, dive into what we can think about in terms of teens now in the present. So we're going to hear a question from Andy. Sounds like Andy's a track and field coach at the high school level. And let's hear what he has to say about working with teens, and we'll try to answer his question.
Hey, my name is Andy and I coach track and field in Oregon. I was just wondering if there's any strategies for checking in with athletes, you know, as they go through their daily lives, the ebbs and flows.
Oh, Andy, thank you. I love that.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, so good. And I love what I love about that I'm going to just say right off the bat, because one of the first thoughts that came into my head was the fact that you're asking this, and you all are going to hear me say some version of this probably most times, but I think it's worth punctuating. Andy, you must have a strong rapport with your athletes in the fact that you're even checking in about that, of what is the best way to touch base with them and make sure that their needs are getting met and honor the fluctuations that just come with being a teen, because we are expecting so much of them. And the fact that you have your pulse on that, I want to give you a major shout out and kudos, because I think we oftentimes undervalue that quality that coaches bring to the equation that really is the difference maker for teens. So bravo to you on that front.
Yeah, I think about how important it is to even just notice or even just be interested in the experience of teens. And I mean, I guess in some way, if you're coaching, you know, at that level, potentially there's already some interest in being helpful or a mentor or in some fashion. At the same time, I do think there are a lot of coaches who have teen athletes who don't think about those things and are not considering, what do my, you know, athletes need? How can I show up for them? How do I kind of handle the ebb and flow of their emotions and the things that they're dealing with? And I just think that Andy's question is spot on. So I don't know. What do you think, Katie? What are some ideas around how to be able to help with that type of check-in and connection? What do you think?
Yeah, I think knowing that athletes are going to have ebb and flow, right? Making space for that, of nothing is linear, and naming that for athletes can be very helpful. So the fact that coaches could say something along the lines of not expecting them to be superhuman and only be progressing or only be getting PRs or only having exceptional days or only feeling their positive end of the spectrum emotions, simply making space for the athlete of saying, hey, you know what's going on? How can I support you? Hey, what do you need from me right now? Hey, team, even as a collective team, everybody knows I'm huge on team agreements. And I think one of the things at early season meetings with teams is to lay that out. There are going to be ebbs and flows. Name it for them. You will have times when you feel great and you will have times where you feel really crummy. We want you to know we are here for you at anywhere you fall on that spectrum. You will not only be in the positive feeling end of it. So know as you have fluctuations, we are here for you. And naming that for teens can go such a long way in terms of building trust, taking that off their plate, that they are the ones that are responsible for just alleviating all of it or pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. If you can create a team culture that can embrace the variability or the ebbs and flows, if you will, that's a huge starting point. What would you say?
Yeah, I think about it is knowing the individual athletes. And I think too often teens get kind of clumped into this one grouping and that they're all the same and they all need the same thing, where I think a good coach is willing to have individual check-ins with their athletes. And that looks very different across teams. I mean, it may not be a sit down 1 hour conversation. It may be just walking up to them during practice or training and just saying, hey, how you holding up? How are things going? Tracking things that are going on for them and asking about it. And rather than making assumptions that if they're, you know, have attitude on one given day, or they can't kind of keep their emotions in check in some capacity, then that means that they're being defiant. And so I think those natural emotions for teens that are, you know, really built upon what happens through kind of all the hormone fluctuations and puberty and the challenges that teens have of just living and being in the world, they're going to have bad days. And, you know, those bad days need to be seen as them working through something, not as being defiant or causing problems or, you know, rather than benching those kids, having more conversations with those kids. And so I do think part of managing that fluctuation is turning towards it, rather than this turning away. And, you know, oftentimes that is missed, I guess. So I'm just like thinking about how much it matters to walk up to a teen and just say, "Hey, gosh, how are you doing? How, you know, I heard that you had a really tough test in so and so's class. How's everything at home?" You know, and just being open to having those conversations, I think is a dramatic shift that if it was happening across the board, would alleviate a lot of the issues that pop up on teams.
Totally. For coach and athlete, that
Absolutely.
both parties benefit from a, to your point, 2 minute conversation. It doesn't have to be this grandiose process. And that's what we hear so often from coaches is like, I don't have the time. And I get it. The coaches are tasked with so many things and juggling so many plates. And this is a 30 second conversation. This isn't a multiple hour conversation. It
Right.
is, I want to learn about you beyond what I know about you in competition, or beyond what I know about you in terms of your capacity as an athlete. What else do you like to do? Oh, I love cats. Cool. I want to know more about your cats, right? And then it helps not only the coach have another connector with the athlete, it also helps the athlete cultivate another connector within themselves beyond just this athlete portion. And so both parties benefit. And when the athlete is taking care of their whole self, they're able to show up with a different bandwidth for performing. And it is kind of this feedback loop that a little nuggets go a very long way.
Very long way. And I think it gets at, you know, one of my pet peeves of, you know, folks that choose truly to work with teenagers and adolescents is this idea that, oh my gosh, what they're going through is so silly. It's so gossipy. I don't even care. You know, if they only knew what it was like for me or what adulthood is really like, it's this almost like tension that pops up versus realizing the context of those kids in that moment, that is their whole world, their whole world. And so if they're going through a breakup, if they if a friend of theirs dies, if a family member leaves town for a long period of time, any shakeup in whatever their universe is a major, major shakeup. They are selfish and self-absorbed for a reason. And we don't need to go into all the detailed science about all that, but it's not by choice, it's by design. They're figuring out who they are, what they care about. And so to me, whenever kids are struggling in those ways, or even just kind of more quiet on any given day, or more loud, and we're going like, gosh, what is up with them? Turn towards those moments. And you don't have to say what's wrong. Don't do that. Just connect, go and have a conversation. If you're a coach, you have ways to connect with people, hopefully. If you don't, let us know how we can help you with that. But I just think those moments of, you know, turning towards a teen and getting on board with the things that they care about and hearing about it. And I love what you said about cats, because, you know, I know it was so random, but at the same time, that's the whole point. You know, you might have someone on your team where like their cats are the most important thing to them. Or, you know, what they do with their sibling on Saturday mornings. Who knows what the story is, but that's the story that matters. And whether we agree with it, think it's silly, hate cats, whatever the thing is, it's the thing that matters to them. And you have chosen to mentor this group of kids. And you have now chosen to mentor each of them equitably. And part of that means building those connections.
It actually, as you were talking, it kind of brought this full circle moment of the conversation I was having with Camden as we were deciphering between language. One of the things I said to him is, well, I care deeply. My hope is that I'm able to support you how you need to be supported, and I'm not adding pressure to you because of my own system or my own needs, that I want to be able to be attuned with you because this is your experience and I want to be a supporter versus somebody who's adding more pressure. And I think about that with coaches too, is if you know the whole person, they're going to, the student athlete will feel more valued because you see them beyond their result or how they're performing on the track or how they're pole vaulting or whatever the case may be, because you value them. You value that they love cats. Even if you don't love cats, you're curious because it's something that matters to them, mm-hmm. versus just hounding them or adding this extra pressure of what you need them to be for your own gains versus what do they want?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'm thinking, you know, that my, I know I've told you all this, my niece has started doing track and field, and she's a senior in high school. This is not something she started young, and she just wanted to learn something new and challenge herself. And she's doing amazing. She's getting PRs and discus each time that she does it, which is a blast to watch. But all that to say, that's just kind of the background. She was saying to me last week that she got some one-on-one attention with her coach, and she thinks that made all the difference. And I thought about it and going, you know, of course I'm overanalyzing in that moment going like, have you not gotten one-on-one before? Has that coach not come over and given you that type of attention because you're kind of new on the team and you're just kind of doing it for fun and for, you know, challenging yourself, or, you know, all of this overthinking when it really, that to her, that was everything. And so, you know, just the turning towards and having those one-on-one moments, again, like you said, even if it's brief, even if you have a huge team and it's not possible to do it how you would wish that you could, a little is better than nothing. And so, yeah, I love that we talked about that. And I think, you know, anyone who's choosing to work with teens and young people, shout out to you. It is not an easy task. I used to coach basketball of mostly eighth grade and ninth grade boys basketball. And that was a, maybe that should be a podcast episode. It was the most fun I ever had as a coach, and also really challenging. Those are tough years, and they care a lot about what they're doing, and it's everything to them. And as adults, we can lose sight of why that's so important. So, well, as we wrap up, Katie, what do you have going these next couple days? Anything fun?
Yeah, some youth sports, which is always fun because do get excited and I love being a fan.
And you care so much.
And
you
do.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly.
And I hope to get out on a bike ride. I think the snow's melting, so the trail should be a little bit clearer. Nice. And the woods is my happy spot. So what about you? What's on your docket?
Yeah, not to sound like a broken record, but going to get some work done. And I am just really excited to actually watch some golf this weekend. So we're recording this on the Friday of the Masters tournament. So this will come out next week. So the Masters tournament will already have been done and the winner will have been crowned their green jacket. But I'm excited to watch. So I don't really have any predictions yet though. I probably should. That would have been a lot more fun coming into this conversation, but we'll see. We'll see.
On the golf front, I will say, listeners, Full Swing on Netflix, season 2, episode 3, give it a watch. If you like sports in general, they do the best job I've seen conveying mental health in sport beyond our conversation last week of performance anxiety. They talk about grief and loss and the complexity that is underlying for all these athletes. So give a little plug there. It's worth watching if you're curious.
Yeah. Well, full confession. You told me that as soon as you watched it and I still haven't watched it. So maybe I'll do that as homework. Until we get back together. Well, thank you all for listening. A few details as we wrap up here, you can find us at athletesmentalhealthfoundation.org. You can also find our Instagram handle, which is Athletes Mental Health Foundation. And as we continue to do sports shrinks, we're getting really great, I was going to say viewership, but I guess it's audio ship, if that's a thing. I think we just made up a word.
Yeah, I like it.
Audio-ness. And so... I make fun of Katie sometimes for adding nests to things. And so that's an inside joke that is no longer inside. But it does help us if you leave comments. It helps us if you review us. It helps us if you download us. So those are some of those metrics that can help us do this more often. And we're just glad you're here. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.